Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's way is incomparable. I vow to attain it. Good morning, everyone. You hear me okay? Sound good? All right. Yeah, just spin the chairs around so you can join in. That's fine. Starting maybe next week, if I can get it together, we're going to go back to the way we used to do things in the Zendo. That is, we'll have two sittings with kinyan or walking meditation in between. So we'll have 25 minutes of sitting, 5 minutes of walking, 25 minutes of sitting. We'll serve tea, and then we'll have our Dharma talk. I'm going to switch how the Zoom meeting works. So instead of having a waiting room, it's going to be password. So that means you can come and go. So if you only want to sit for 30 minutes, you can do that. If you want to wait till towards the end, you can do that. However you want to experience your time, you'll have more flexibility that way. So that means you'll have to go on the website and download the new link once it's posted. I'll send out a newsletter announcing this whole thing. And we discussed it a little bit this morning, and everybody's in favor of meditating more. At least that's what they think right at this moment. So, all right. I'm going to read a little bit from Linji this morning. Linji is the founder of the lineage that my root teacher, Gosan Shin, was part of. So the thing about lineages, I just want to be clear, this is not important. It's like everything else. You know, Buddha talks about there's four kinds of horses. One horse just needs to barely see the whip and it already knows to go. Another horse just needs a touch of it to recognize that it needs to go. The third kind of horse needs a gentle whack to get it to go. And the fourth kind of horse, pretty stubborn, needs a couple of good whacks to get it to go. So you could be any one of those horses at any given time. So just like astrology has these 12 signs, right? And we all know, depending on when you're born and what the stars are and where the moon is and all the rest, is how your personality is affected and reflected to the world. So all these lineages are like that. Essentially, what we're after is awakening to our Buddha nature. You can take the low road, you can take the high road, or you can bushwhack. That's up to you. All right? I just want to not spend too much energy on what lineage belongs to who and where and what. This is from a book, I think it's by Red Pine, about Linji. And in this particular section, Linji says, followers of the way, that would be you all. Mind is without form and pervades the 10 directions. In the eye, it is called seeing. In the ear, it is called hearing. In the nose, it smells odors. In the mouth, it holds converse. In the hands, it grasps and seizes. In the feet, it runs and carries. Fundamentally, it is one pure radiance. Divided, it becomes the six harmoniously united spheres of sense. If the mind is void, wherever you are emancipated. What is my purpose in speaking this way? I do so only because you followers of the way cannot stop your mind from running around everywhere seeking, because you go clampering after the worthless contrivances of the men of old. Followers of the way, if you take my viewpoint, a bodhisattva who has attained the completed mind of the 10th stage will be like a mere hireling. A bodhisattva of equivalent enlightenment or a bodhisattva of marvelous enlightenment will be like pillared prisoners. An arhat and a praktabuddha will be like privy filth. Bodhi and nirvana will be like hitching posts for asses. Why is this so? Followers of the way, it is only because you haven't yet realized the emptiness of the three Amsakaya Kalpas that you have such obstacles. A true follower of the way is never like this. Conforming with circumstances as they are, he exhausts his past karma. Accepting things as they are, he puts on his clothes. When he wants to walk, he walks. When he wants to sit, he sits. He never has a single thought of seeking Buddhahood. Why is this so? A man of old said, if you seek Buddha through karma-creating activities, Buddha becomes the great purportant of birth and death. Virtuous monks, time is precious, and yet hurrying hither and thither, you try to learn meditation, to study the way, to accept names, to accept phrases, to seek Buddha, to seek a patriarch, to seek a good teacher, to think and speculate. Make no mistake, followers of the way. After all, you have a father and a mother. What more do you seek? Turn your own light inward upon yourselves. A man of old said, Yajanadatta thought he had lost his head, but when his seeking mind came to rest, he was at ease. Just be ordinary. Stop seeking. I think it's very instructive and direct. So that's why we do what we do. We're here to discover for ourselves. So that was my thought this morning. Now I'm ready to hear whatever it is you would like to talk about. Bring it on.
Thank you, Will. Appreciate your talk. It was good for me because it speaks to where I am right now and getting out of my own way, so to speak, is the biggest challenge because I'm trying to figure it out, and that is not a good path for me. My monkey mind says figuring it out is of paramount importance, because if I don't figure it out, I'm not going to know where I'm supposed to go. But that is just anathema to my practice. It's only when I kind of run into a wall and I get some awareness knocked back into me that I realize that I'm off the path. But that's a good thing, because at least in my life, I've learned that trial and error is the best way to learn. So I get a little frustrated with myself because I keep making the same mistakes, it seems like, but I have to be gentle with me.
Thank you, Ross. Thanks for sharing that. That's just the way we are. Habit energy. As we study ourselves, we get to know ourselves, we get to understand where habit energy comes from, and then we can change it. So,
you know, I have a saying that if I've heard something three times in a week, it must mean that I need to look into it. And that's the third time this week I've heard the term habit energy. So obviously I am meant to go research that a little more.
Yeah, well, the work you're doing right now, habit energy is an important part of that.
Yeah.
Also, we talked a little bit last week about something I think that applies too, which is that the whole thing about trying to remake the past into something different than it is,
yeah,
instead of accepting what it was and it's gone.
Yeah.
So by constantly trying to remake it, we're holding on, we're clinging to something that no longer exists.
Yeah.
That's habit energy. I said, you know, I really enjoy looking back at a teacher from 1,000 years ago and seeing how he's directing me right to my own mind and how his words or her words are so direct about what this experience is all about, being a human. No matter what culture, no matter what language, no matter what you eat for dinner. So this common thread of humanity, life and death, is kind of what holds it all together. The great mystery. Anything else? So happy Father's Day there, Michael.
Yes, happy Father's Day.
Mother's Days, Father's Days. I had a friend that used to say every day was Christmas. Every day is Mother's Day and Father's Day. Every day is to be appreciated. But it's nice that we have holidays, right?
Sometimes it feels like every day is tax day.
Yeah.
The bill.
That's the other one. Thank you for reminding me. Chop wood, carry water. Charlene said to me the other day that I have this pattern. She says, I have this pattern in my life of, and then someone that was with her, I think we were having dinner with some friends, and the other person said, oh, you have an angel on your shoulder. And I didn't respond because I couldn't disagree with that. But my feeling is that we all have an angel on our shoulder, actually. But it's not another. It's not some other. It's that aspect of ourselves that we don't see. We don't understand. We don't know because we're in our own way. But when we get out of the way, then the angel can work in our lives. And what we need to have our experience be more fulfilling, it's there. So abundance of the universe is always there. It's never not abundant. It's always just restricted to us because of our own understanding or lack of it. A Zen master once, I think it was Sun San Sunim, was asked, so why are you sick? If you are a Zen master and you can be healthy and you can you cure your body? And he hesitated and he said, well, that would not be appropriate for me to do.
I don't get it.
Right. Why wouldn't you? Right?
Right.
When you see the whole picture, it looks different. What seems relevant to you from a limited perspective is not the same. Back to that horse, you know, maybe you need to be whipped a little harder. The horse that doesn't need to be whipped sees the direction to go and just goes. So wisdom, you know, not something that we can attribute it to our idea of what it is. something beyond our ideas of what it is. One of the things we say about practicing Zen is it's about resolving the problem of birth and death. So this whole thing about letting go, I mean, think about it. Ultimately, we have to let go of this. Life is short. Yes. So
I was just going to say, speaking of letting go, that's one of the things I've been working on, and letting go of my relationship with my dad. And it's been really difficult because I want to have that relationship, but I know it's not a good one to have. And so letting go is really hard. And so I've actually started scrapbooking photos of him so that way I can reflect on it and then make it easier to let go, so that way I can literally put it in a neat little package and close it and be like, and it's done. So that's been my, whenever I get super worked up thinking about the past and, you know, like, okay, I need to let this go, I break out the scrapbook and all the old photos and I start cutting and pasting, and then eventually I just feel like, okay, I can stop where I am right now, close it, and come back to it when I'm feeling that, whatever it is that I'm feeling. It's nice. It's a nice way to let it go. It moves that anxious energy into something I can physically do, but then also helps me resolve it in my mind too.
Yeah, so looking at another being from our perspective is limited. Understanding how someone may be suffering is compassion. That's different. And when my father passed away, I had no relationship with him whatsoever. And there was a lot of resentment and anger and just, you know, I had written him off, which is what one of the, my things that I do, you know, and how I deal with things. I just write them off rather than deal with them, which of course is holding on to them. It's like, really, is that the way you're really letting go? Are you really letting go by doing that? So I did this meditation. Back then I was doing different forms of meditation, and I did a chakra counting meditation where I went through the different colors of the chakras. And in my meditation, I got into a fairly deep state. And my father appeared to me in this sort of yucky green cloud. And he was bent over in a fetal position. And it still gives me chills when I think about it, because I was holding him there by my attitude. That was the ultimate letting go. Because I was only hurting myself and my relationship with myself by keeping this dark cloud in my consciousness.
It's funny you say that, because that's literally what I was meditating on today, was my relationship with him. And I tried to, for a moment, just envision myself as him, right? Like, what makes him such an angry, miserable person? And so that way, like, if I can picture it from his point of view, I can have that compassion towards him. So when I, you know, so I'm not so entangled in it as well. So I, you know, I thought about it. I'm like, you know, I can see from his point of view why he is the way that he is. But then I also pictured him, like how you said your father with the cloud, I pictured my father like a dog in a cage that's just angry and biting at everybody. And, you know, and I can step back and say, I see why the dog is angry and biting and, you know, attacking everybody around him, but that doesn't mean I have to keep putting my hand in the cage too. I can be compassionate towards him and say, like, I understand where it's coming from without having to keep putting my hand in there and getting bitten. And that's why I'm doing the scrapbooking thing, because I'm hoping that every time I see the photos, I can remind myself that there is someone under all of that, that, and then let it go and say, like, but I can't keep getting bit, so I need to let it go for me.
Sure. Sure.
But yeah, that's what I did today. So it was like, whew, I need a glass of water. That was a tough one.
Yeah. Family. Oh, boy.
Right? That's why I did it. It's Father's Day. What a better day to do it on.
Well, I have two daughters that are still living. One of them, I know I'm okay with. The other one, I'm not so sure. We've made a lot of mistakes.
Well, I haven't thought about this because I went through this experience with my mother and carried her with me for years and years and carried the anger for years and years and shared it with everybody I met. And then I think through meditation and inner work, I realized that I was afraid to let it go, that I didn't know what I would do with my happiness if I let it go. Who would I be? What would I be like without that in my life? And then other events happened, which brought her to my doorstep, and I was to share her exiting from this life. It just worked out that way. And so I also went through that letting go with her in my home, and eventually she couldn't speak because of her illness. And so I got to see her without any of the ugliness coming out of her mouth. And then eventually I got to love her. And I was there with her when she left. And it couldn't hurt me anymore. And I had completed something amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Alice. That's a beautiful story. I can relate.
Still thinking about what you said about the, you know, the transition from life to death, and or at least that's what I heard, and how to me that means I have to make it, or I want to make it as seamless as possible. That means a lot of letting go and acceptance. Trust, things that don't come easily to me.
The thing that comes to my mind about that, to just follow up on what you're saying, is what Alice just said about the experience of being able to love by understanding that you were carrying this and having actually let it go. Because then you have it all, you see. So the thing about letting go, it's like we think of it as though we're letting go, but actually what we're doing is we're getting it all. So enlightenment is shining the light on everything. It's not like you're letting something go so something else can replace it.
Yes.
You're letting go of the struggle and the pain, and allowing the love and the joy. So, you know, it's an allowing. So maybe we should change it from letting go to allowing. But allowing what? That's the big question. What are you allowing in your life?
Letting it be.
Say again?
Letting it be, not letting it go.
Letting it be. Anything else? Good conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day to everyone.
Yeah. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you.